We are joined today by Paul, the Titan of Terror Tremblay. We'll have to see if that sticks. Probably not. He's doing his very first middle grade book. We're going to get into that in a second. First question I like to ask all the time, what is your supervillain origin story?
It's kind of long and boring, but I mean, I'll try to speed it up. Growing up, I wasn't a huge reader. I was a child of cable TV, which came to our town super early. And so I just watched HBO and MASH and all these things. And I wanted to be Larry Bird, which didn't work out. But fast forward, and I was a math major in college. But right after I graduated, and right before I graduated, I took a random English class, which I felt, you know, I really enjoyed. And my girlfriend, who's now my wife, bought me Stephen King's The Stand. And so that the combination of those two things turned me into a reader for pleasure, which I really wasn't before. And I went off to grad school for 2 years. And after 2 years of the long distance relationship thing with my now wife, you know, I had a lot more free time. I fell in love with reading, and then I had a weird itch to try writing a story. So it's really kind of hard to explain. I wish I killed somebody or something, but I didn't.
It sounds like it worked out well for you, and you kind of got stuck in the horror genre right off the bat if you started with King. So,
yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, from King, I branched out and found, like, you know, Peter Straub and Clive Barker and Shirley Jackson and all the hits.
Perfect. All right. One thing I also like to ask, just for those who are, you know, authors out there and they never know if they're going to be able to fit this type of stuff in, what does a day in the life of Paul Tremblay look like today?
So I've been a high school math teacher ever since I've started writing. Like, they've always been intertwined. So right now it's summer, so I'm much happier. I don't have a sunburn or anything because it's been kind of rainy here. But, you know, so when I'm not teaching, a day in the life looks like I get up and write in the morning, and then do exercises so I don't fall apart because I'm, you know, over 50 now. When I'm at school, it's a little bit different during the school year. I just try to steal an hour and a half or so during the day, you know, and that could change where it happens. Sometimes, like, I used to be really good at writing when the kids were taking a quiz or something and they could have been cheating their asses off and I would have no idea. But now that my kids are older, I tend to write at night if it's a school day.
I wonder if your students are like, man, we've got Paul Tremblay as a teacher, or if they're just like, oh, it's just Paul, you know, because they know you.
Yeah, I mean, certainly not the first part. I mean, I at this point, I do have, like, posters, like, in my room, like, of, like, the movie and like the Stephen King mm-hmm. tweeted about A Head Full of Ghosts. And actually, my favorite last year was a senior, super smart guy. He just got a 5 in the AP BC calculus exam. First week of the school year, said, Stephen King, is that the guy in the wheelchair? Like, no. To his classmates' credit, everyone else was making fun of him for being weirdly stupid. Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes I also feel like that's not the worst thing not to know in the course of life.
I would say the students are a good reminder sometimes. Like, if I'm in my own head, like, oh, yeah, there's this whole other world and I'm such, like, a small part of it. It's fun to have that window to that still.
Little keep it grounded there, I think.
Yeah.
Last thing I wanted to ask before we start doing a little bit about the book. If you had it's kind of funny because you are a teacher, because I always word this like, if you're going to teach a class, but if you're going to teach a class, and I will say this is on author 101, doesn't have to be specifically writing, but just things that you wished you'd known, or now that you know that you could tell somebody else, you know, do this or expect this or whatever.
Yeah, that's a great question. A hard one too. But so I'll say this, I wish I knew this when I was younger, but I also wish more writers knew that they can say no. They can say no to their editor, and it won't ruin their career. You know, you can fight to keep the title that you want to keep, or, you know, anything, you know, that happens to be in your book. You know, I actually, the older I've gotten and the more I've written, I think that the advice of kill your darlings is terrible advice. Yep. If it is so darling to you, you should fight with, you know, tooth and nail to save those darlings. You can cut other stuff. But yeah, keep the stuff that's important to you.
And that's a good point, too. I may be saying the wrong person. I think it was Jen Lyons that said something about, I had mentioned one of my favorite characters in one of their books. Mm-hmm. And there was like, that's the one my editor was trying to get rid of. I'm like, what were they thinking?
Yeah.
Perfect. So I don't, because I did read the ebook, I got this here real quick just so everybody can see.
Oh, very nice. This is
the book that is coming out. By the time you see this, it'll be coming out tomorrow. So, yeah. But yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about. What prompted you, obviously, to write a middle grade book?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly wasn't like a planned career pivot or anything like that. So I mentioned that I've been a high school teacher. I did take 1 year off, a full academic year off sabbatical in 2022-23. That was when the movie Knock at the Cabin was being made, and it came out. You know, that afforded me to take a year off. So in that year, I finished my adult novel very early, horror movie, finished it like 4 months before deadlines. I'm like, oh, I've got some time. What am I going to do? And then, I just fishing around for ideas. I happened to have what became sort of like the core image or scene of the book of a strange old man carrying a burlap sack and knocking at the door of a lonely kid's house. He's like, hey, I've got a friend for you. And he opens it up, and inside is this like weird clay mannequin like kid that's alive, but has like no facial features, but can sculpt smiles on his face. And I was like, oh, I thought that was really weird. At some point during the writing, I figured, hey, maybe this is a middle grade novel just because the protagonist was 12-year-old. But I don't know. My I don't know if this is the best way to go about a writing career, but I've been going about it by like, I'm going to write it and then let someone else figure out what to do with it.
Well, it seems to be working. I actually, again, you said this is a middle grade book. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I finished it up. In fact, I finished it this morning. It was only a couple hundred pages. So I tried not to read it too early so I'd have time to forget. but yeah, it was super quick and easy read. I think it fits good in that middle grade book. I feel like there's probably not a lot of, well, let's face it, it's middle grade. There's not a lot of horror books in that age group. And I think this really fills a need. I also think that the way you wrote it, I mean, for those who care about this type of stuff, you know, there's no cussing, there's no sex, there's no body horror ish, you know, nothing's going to gross anybody out.
Yeah. No gore. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's really fits in that sweet spot. I would definitely have gotten it for my kids when they were younger. And again, I'm also 50, I'm 54. So you know, I'm also in my 50s. Yeah. I still enjoyed it. I would, in fact, we're not going to spoil anything.
Sure.
It kind of leaves itself open. There could be a sequel if you wanted to go down that path. Don't know if you've planned on it, but I'm saying you could.
No, yeah. I mean, it's definitely open that way, but it just felt sort of natural to the story itself. I as a reader, I've never been huge into series. Obviously I've read a few here and there, but you know, I think the last series I read was Stephen Graham Jones's Killer Angel Lake trilogy. And before that, I can't remember the last trilogy that I read. That just reflects my personal interest. I like bouncing around. There's no current plans to write a sequel. But
okay. I just know middle grade, you know, also they love their sequels in middle grade. What can I say?
They do. Yeah.
You talked about having this guy, you know, and bring up the bag and brings it up to the house. When did you, because I thought it was an interesting take, when did you decide to put in the telephone? And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, so it was there in the beginning. I think I figured I needed, some of it was like a little bit of a logic experiment, like, okay, why did this old dude, you know, weird guy show up at the house? I needed sort of like a mechanism for that to happen. At the same time, I was trying to figure out reasons why Casey, who's the 12-year-old, would be feeling so lonely and isolated enough that he would accept sort of this kind of thing. So yeah, you know, when the phone went in, it became a lot more important. I do remember it became a lot more important than it was when I first put it in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also love, and it's, you actually did this in the book. I was going to show it to everybody, but I realized that the PDF copy didn't really have a cover. So, but you put it in the back of the book in the notes about why you had it in during the COVID period and kind of what that, you know, that why he was looking for a friend, that type of thing, which I thought was interesting. I also thought it was very on point for the age group that this is aimed at. Is there anything else that you were looking at or anything that maybe changed from that first part? Other than, like I said, I do know that the COVID wasn't the original thing, but then you kind of put it there.
Yeah. No, like, and that really grew out of what I mentioned, like, why is Casey feeling so alone? It's like, oh, he was, you know, going to school during, you know, 2021, or the end of 2020 and then early 2021. So in a lot of ways, it's weird. It became sort of the book I didn't know I needed to write to sort of metaphorically deal with like my experiences as a teacher during, you know, the early years of the pandemic. You know, so I mean, for readers out there, like the pandemic's mentioned in like 5% of the pages, if that. I mean,
right.
95% of the book takes place in Casey's house by himself. So, I mean, it's very much sort of like in the background. But just in terms of like the the feels of the story, as the kids say, I think that what I was trying to sort of replicate sort of those feelings of uneasiness and, you know, and loneliness and weirdness that we all went through.
Yeah, and I won't get into it because in the story, you get to it eventually. You refer to it as the Zoom incident. And I think I kind of actually love the fact that you did that. It's like, because as we're reading the book, we're like, okay, what's a Zoom incident? And we're waiting to find out what that was.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I won't say too much about it, but it's also really in the book. But I mean, it does sort of revolve around like a bullying thing that Casey experiences. And, you know, students in my school didn't experience the exact same thing, but you know, every school has issues with cyberbullying. So, I mean, it was pretty, unfortunately, all too easy to come up with something that seems sort of realistic that, you know, the students are dealing with in our wonderful 21st century digital world. The Zoom incident. Yeah. I think, and even just saying that, I think adults are like, ooh, the Zoom incident. I can only imagine what that is.
Yeah. But again, I love the fact that we started out with the name of it and then eventually it gets revealed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I also think it ties into kind of one of those things that feeds themselves. I know, for instance, I had Richard Paul Evans on, and he's got a little bit of a tick that he's self-conscious about, although I didn't even notice it until he said anything. So it's like it's not super noticeable. But I feel like this thing, and again, this is one of the things that Casey's going through.
Right.
Is, you know, he's got this little bit of a tick that he gets, but he gets it when he's anxious. But when he starts ticking, then he gets more anxious. And it almost becomes a wheel he can't get off.
Right. Yeah. You know, again, like I think as, you know, almost all writers do, and especially in that weird time of the pandemic, like, you know, so I mentioned some of my teaching and students' experience went into this, but also, you know, people in my family and extended family, sort of, you know, what they were dealing with, you know, and this, you know, I won't say who it is, but, you know, there's someone that, you know, that a family member that I love, you know, had gone through that kind of thing. Mm. Yeah, you know, it's like typically what I kind of do as a horror writer. I mean, serve the story first, but I kind of default to, even if there's like really strange things going on, I try to make it feel as real as possible. Because those are my, you know, favorite kind of horror stories. I mean, Evil Dead 2 is like one of my favorite movies. So, I mean, that's not so realistic. But writing, if I'm going to spend time writing a book, it helps me to try to make it feel real.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. So like, again, I won't go into any details, but I do like, I'll say it's, I don't know if it's the afterword. I'll just say it's the final chapter. Yeah. I'm trying to remember now if it was the final chapter, but you do kind of have that thing that wraps up some stuff, but also takes the story just a little bit past where we left off, which I enjoyed. Again, that's why I kind of thought maybe we could get a sequel out of this. Again, I won't hold you to it, but if you wrote one, I think it would work. I don't feel like this wraps up in like they do like the movie where it's like it did really well. We have to do a book, you know, a movie too. It's like you don't have to do a book too.
Yeah, I mean, of all the books I've written, it's really the one that does sort of leave open to there's another story after this, but I don't know what that story is. And frankly, I'm getting paid a lot more for my adult novels than my middle grade novel, so. You know, maybe once my kids are through college.
Unless it goes crazy and blows up or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
So did you start out with a name or was that just a fun tongue-in-cheek that you named him Morel?
Oh, yeah. I didn't start out with a name. Like when I was looking for a name, I was like, okay. Yeah, for the fun tongue-in-cheek part, for adults especially. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many kids aren't even going to get that. They're just going to be like, who names their kid this? But
right.
Okay, so again, this is a very short book, which limits the amount of stuff I can talk about without giving anything away.
Yeah.
At what point in the writing process, like, again, you came up, I don't feel like we're going to be giving anything away. You know, I wouldn't even say it. I don't want to take a chance. But what point did you decide, I'm going to say what Morrell was, that background to him.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good question. slightly complicated by, and maybe that's a decent story too. But so I started the book in the spring of 23, and then in mid-June of 23, I got a concussion and didn't know I had one. And so like I, you know, for like a month afterwards, I did the worst things you could do with a concussion, like screen time and all that stuff. Sleepy. So I kind of wrote like the last probably third of a novel in a concussed blur. that said though, I think, you know, early on I did sort of work out what I thought a moral was made of, so to speak. Mm-hmm. so I think that was pretty early. I didn't outline the book, but I took like a lot of notes. And I usually do like a lot of notes for the characters before I sort of really like dive in. I will say this book compared to some other ones, like I usually have like an ending in mind. And this one, like it was, I really didn't know what the ending was going to be until like much later in the book, which was different. It was actually both nerve wracking and kind of exciting at the same time.
Gotcha. I will say for the adults out there who are trying to get their kids to read, the fact that you can A, tell them that this is a horror novel, and B, and I don't have the number right in front of me, but it's less than 250 pages long. This is not a thick book.
Yeah.
No, it shouldn't scare anybody off.
Right. I mean, page wise, it might be in the 200s, but it's like it's big font. It was like 47,000 words. I tend to think in words because I still write all my stuff in Microsoft Word. And most of my adult novels are like 80,000. So. Yeah, it's like almost a short novel, for sure.
Yeah, that's always a fun disconnect on authors, because every author, not just you, it's like 80,000 words, 100,000 words, 75,000, and the readers are like, but how many pages is it?
Yeah, yeah, I know.
That's all we see.
and like some really amazing artwork by Sam Wolf Conley. That was actually something, I'm sure they probably would have done it anyway, but like in the negotiation process, that was something I asked for at the end is like, I'll give on this point, but if I do, then like I want this book to be illustrated.
There were a couple of those in there, so I got to see some of them.
Yeah. In the hardcover, which I've seen, I don't have in front of me because I'm a donkey. But in the hardcover, like the art looks amazing. They really high res'd it up. I mean, it's all black and white, but it's I think, you know, it definitely adds to the reading experience, I think.
Yeah, perfect. So loved it. And again, another thing you mentioned, it is not, there is a difference between the mass market paper books where somebody decides that they have to put like 300 lines on each page and this is much bigger. And again, I think that also helps because I think that goes towards the age group that it's sent towards. I feel like they are expecting to have a little bit more space on the page.
For sure. Yeah. Not, I mean, not that I'm an expert in middle grade. I haven't read a ton. A friend of mine, I probably should mention this when you asked about like where the book came from. Part of it also just came from a few years ago, a writer, Mallory O'Mara, who wrote the great book called The Lady from the Black Lagoon. It's nonfiction. And it's about the woman who secretly, because history sort of buried her, designed the original Gilman suit. Anyway, wonderful book. Highly recommend it for any horror fans. Into nonfiction. Anyway, I saw her in an event. She was like, Paul, you have to read this book. It's called The Nest by Kenneth Oppel. I'm like, oh, okay. She's like, it's middle grade, but it's really scary and it's great. You know, and I don't know. I'm sure you do too, get a lot of book recommendations, but Mallory went so far as to actually physically mail me a copy of the book. So I'm like, oh, well, I better read it then.
Yeah.
And I read it and I was like, oh, I didn't know you could do this in middle grade. I mean, it was just, you know, because I don't know. In my head, middle grade was more like kind of like fun stories, like, you know, sort of Scooby-Doo-esque in a way, like, you know, like you described, you know, it's kind of safe. And no, The Nest was terrifying and it was beautifully written. And I thought it really went into some really interesting, murky, you know, tough places. So with The Nest sort of rattling around in my head when I had the clay sort of boy image, I would say those two things helped push me into thinking, okay, maybe I could try my hand at writing a middle grade.
Perfect. Odd question. I don't normally ask this, but you talked about the fact that you got done with a book like 4 months early. So you wrote this. How long did this book actually take you to write?
I started it, let's say like February or March of 23. And I finished it in like August.
Wow.
So it's pretty short. Normally my adult novels take me like 12 to 15 months to have like a full draft that I turn in. So, I mean, that August counts as like, you know, me giving it to my agent and him trying to sell it. I mean, there was definitely some time spent with, once we had a deal and, you know, I had like probably spent another couple of weeks with the editor, you know, going through it and stuff like that. But yeah, it was pretty quick.
Did you find, and you can skip this one if you want, I'll cut it out. But did you find that you had any difficulties selling a book that wasn't quote unquote your wheelhouse?
No. You know, luckily I didn't, you know, my agent does have plenty of experience with YA and middle grade, and really, what I wanted, my hope was to stay in house. Like William Morrow is my publisher for my adult novels, and it's an imprint of HarperCollins. So I was really kind of hoping to stay in house. Cause I, that means a lot to me. You know, I think just having all the books in one place, just, you know, just makes it better and makes, you know, more, you know, you're working with similar people, that, you know, want to reinvent the wheel and like go somewhere else, you know, with a new book. So, you know, my agent probably, if he is given truth serum, probably would wanted to go out wider with it, but I found value in like staying inside. Now, in the other part that worked out super well, my adult editor is, you know, a friend, the one who saved my career and like a fairy godmother. And she helped shepherd the book over to Rosemary Brennan at Quilltree Press, you know, who's an amazing editor. So, I mean, I knew I would have like already sort of like built-in safety support stuff. You know, the one thing I was surprised about was, when I turned it in, I started hearing from like the industry people like, oh no, middle grade horror is bad. No one wants it. I was like, what? Because I felt like I'd been seeing like Chuck Wendig put books out and Ali Melenchenko, or I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing her name, Melenko. So that was a little bit of a shock or a surprise to hear. I was like, oh, I thought I was like on the cutting edge of like hot new, hot new market thing. But it worked out.
I'm out there. I feel like the industry, and I'm not calling out anybody in the industry, but I feel like the industry changes slowly in one sense, but then when something does become hot, they like go full in.
Right.
And you go back 5 or 6 years ago, what the heck was romanticism, you know? So you can't do both. I was just curious because I've seen a lot of ones where an author will get a little bit of pushback when they want to go outside their lane, for lack of a better word. And then it'll be something like William Kent Kruger's Ordinary Grace, which becomes his like best-selling book. But they wanted another Cork O'Connor mystery. Instead, they got his best-selling book. So, hey.
Yeah. No, that's all right. I mean, one, lucky. I mean, it was horror, so I felt like, you know, probably genre adjacent. And I'm also super lucky that my editor and publisher allows for me to have, like, a wide definition of what horror could be or what it is. And, you know, it gives me, like, a lot of leeway. Nice. Yeah. And I'm going to hold them to that. with this new book that I turned in. We'll see.
So I'm going to go a little generic on this last one, because again, this is such a short book and there's only so many things we can talk about without, I don't want to spoil it for anybody who's reading it. Is there anything about, well, I guess I didn't even give the gist of the story, but is there anything about the story that you'd want to say that we didn't touch on just so that people kind of have an idea if they want to pick this up?
I don't know. I'm so bad, like trying to not sell my own book, but pitch it. But you know, I will say this, like, you know, when I wrote it, like I didn't really approach it like, oh, I'm writing a middle grade novel. It happened to be a 12-year-old protagonist. So there was no swears. You know, maybe there was no swears. That was the only thing I took out. But, you know, the rest of the stuff wasn't there because the story didn't necessitate it. Like I didn't feel like, oh, this is a totally new writing hat. I wrote it like I would have written any other book. And hopefully to me that means that, like, you know, I respect, you know, the reader's emotional intelligence, whether they're, you know, 10 or 50, you know, and the same with the characters too. I don't know, cause those tend to be sort of my favorite stories, even, you know, even works for like younger readers. And I mentioned The Nest. I think The Nest does that amazingly well, where it's like, no, like you're treating, even though they're not adults, you're treating these readers with the same respect that you would afford an adult, if that makes sense.
Right. Cause I will say, at least from my point of view, it kind of gave me some of the same vibes I've seen in some more adult horror novels, but maybe you just dialed back the dark a hair. So hopefully we're not giving anybody nightmares. But it read really, like I said, it really read to me, like, especially amongst some of the short stories I've read of what are considered full-grown adult horror stories. So, again, I liked it, and I think it's almost anybody of any age can read it.
That's the hope. Please, adults, buy this book. You're the only people I can market to directly, which may, you know, obviously I can't go to 14-year-old houses and be like, hey, buy my book.
Yeah. You don't want to be caught standing on the corner in a trench coat. It's like, I got a paperback right here.
Yeah, right.
Looks a little awkward. Going to go off a little off topic on this one, other than buy the book, but yeah. I do have to ask this one question for you, and you can answer it however you want, or you can not answer it.
Okay.
But let's find out about the chair chucking incident.
Oh, the damn Langan, John Langan. So, all right. I met John Langan and a few other of my dear like writer friends like Michael Sisko and a bunch of other people at this convention called ReaderCon, sort of mm-hmm. like a small Boston regional speculative fiction conference or convention. And anyway, this was like, geez, 2000. Well, I think this wasn't the first con that I met him at. So this was probably like 2008-ish or something. We were playing the party game Mafia. Do you know Mafia?
Only because I've already heard this story, but I still thought I'd enjoy asking you about it.
Yeah. Well, for anyone listening who doesn't know Mafia, I mean, you could look it up, but it's a fun game where you could play at a party with any number of people, or some people are quote unquote Mafia, some people are the village. And basically you try to figure out who's lying. In gameplay, people start, the Mafia kill people, so people start disappearing. Anyway, I had figured the game out. We were down to like five people. And I'm a competitive bastard. I will freely admit that when it comes to games. So if I actually threw the chair, I would fully admit it. So this is the only reason I get fired up about this is because it's not accurate. Mm-hmm. If it was accurate, I would claim it. Because I'm going to side story here. When I first learned this game, I took it to my school and played it with my senior calculus people a lot. And there was one time, it was during finals week, so kids were just blowing off steam. Had a big group. I held up the game because some like hockey player was coming in from practice and he wanted to play. So I held up the game. We played the first round. I knew that he voted me out and I was so upset, but I didn't want to like divulge the secret if I knew who kicked me out. I actually dove out my first floor window. I opened the window and like jumped out and ran around like screaming. So anyway, I'm capable of throwing a chair, but I did not. What had happened at ReaderCon, I've already derailed the story, but what happened at ReaderCon, I got voted out even though I was a villager and I was correct at who was Mafia. So very athletically, I might add, I stood up and straightened my legs so that the backs of my legs would knock the chair over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say that again. It was a very athletic maneuver. I'd never actually picked up the chair and threw it. I stood up and just basically bucked the chair over.
Yep. No, I get it. It's one of those stories. And even the person I heard it from is one of those things where you have friends. And of course,
look at you protecting who told the story. Yeah.
Oh, no, I can tell you who said it in a second, but, I heard it on a podcast, but the fact that they even mentioned though, the fact that as friends do, every time this story gets told, the chair probably goes a little farther.
I think right away, John instantly has just been retelling the story over and over again that I threw a chair, like, because it comes up every time we're in person.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I actually heard it. There's a podcast with Matthew Kressel, who's been on.
Okay.
And David Mercurio, who has not been on.
They're Mafia guys.
Yeah. Yep. And they talked about it. Oh, by the way, anybody young who's still trying to figure out what Mafia is, if you play video games, it's Among Us. If you've played Among Us, that's Mafia.
There's also like, I've seen a lot of kids play a variant called Werewolf, and they actually make cards. It's basically, it's Mafia, but just replace it with like a werewolf. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Among Us is one of those ones that everybody on Twitch was playing for a couple of years. Yeah. So I thought they might recognize that even if they didn't recognize Mafia. But okay. So I'm sorry. I just had to ask about that. I heard this.
That's great.
Because kind of the joke is too, in my house, we had one time we were driving across country and a tire blew. My wife was driving. And so it started to skid a little bit and she got it back under control. And then the second tire on the same side blew.
Oh no.
So we went sliding off, you know, the interstate down an embankment. Luckily, it was out in the middle of nowhere, so it's not like a guardrail or anything. But of course, as me and my kids do every time we tell that story, the car flips one more time. You know, so it's like rolled 47 times now. And it never flipped over in the first place.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's terrifying anyway. But
No, I remember it's one of those weird things too, where I didn't know this was really a thing, but people talk about like when stuff happens, everything goes in slow motion. Mm. I remember sliding off the side of the road and thinking, okay, we're going to flip over, but it's going to be okay. The kids are in the seat. They're all seat belted. We might be upside down, but it's not going to be a big, I had this entire conversation in my head before we slid to a stop. So yes, it does really happen. Things do go in slow motion sometimes. Mm. All right. Obviously, what are you working on now that you can talk about?
Yeah, so I just turned in my next adult novel, and sort of the book deal was just announced in PW recently. So the novel is going to be called Dead But Dreaming of Electric Sheep.
I heard about that now that you say it.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a mix of sort of like a, I tried to describe it as, imagine if the Coen brothers had written or directed, or we'll say written because it's a book, written sort of like a science fiction horror road novel.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm hoping there's some humor to it. You know, there's some AI science fiction and of course some horror too.
Well, I'm a sucker for AI robots and cyborgs, so I will probably be picking that one up.
Right on.
Yeah, I'm not a huge sci-fi guy. I don't like the big war space operas and stuff like that, but you give me a rogue robot or AI and I'm all in. All right. What are you reading right now other than yourself?
I'm looking at anything. I just started reading. I wish I could remember. I'm so bad at the title. Oh, I just finished, it's over there. I just finished reading a short story collection called You Glow in the Dark by Liliana Koyanzi, South American writer. Sorry, I'm forgetting which country exactly. And it was really strange and wonderful collection. You know, it's short, and a lot of them sort of deal with like ecological disaster, but tinged with like some weird, almost horror stuff. Yeah, it's a weird and dreamlike. And I just started Megan Abbott's new book. I've been also in the midst of reading for research for the next novel that's due a year from now. You know, some of that involves the occult. So I hope I don't accidentally set off some spells. If I do, apologies to those affected.
I always feel a little bit bad for authors. You get on one of these things and you got to talk about a book that you finished writing almost a year ago. It's like, yeah. What was that again?
No, it is. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Exactly. Like I finished writing another, like at least in the draft form, almost exactly 2 years ago. you know, and I've written, you know, this big, we're talking numbers earlier, the new novel I just turned in was 125,000 words or 440 pages, by far my longest book. I did not anticipate it to be that long. Or I didn't think it was going to be that long at the start.
Yeah, I never hold it against an author who's looked at me and said, did I write that? Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's like you've got that book from 2 years ago, you've got another book you've written, you've got a book you're working on, and you're trying to keep them all straight. All right. One other question I like to ask just for funsies. Mm-hmm. Is there anything other than writing? Obviously, you're a math teacher.
Yeah.
You said math, correct?
Yeah.
Is there anything that you have a hobby, an interest, something that you like to talk about once in a while so somebody will talk to you about something besides books?
Well, I'm a hack guitar player. I don't know how interesting that is to talk about, but I'm also like, this I usually avoid talking about because the people in sort of the writing circles aren't sports fans, but I'm a huge sports fan, sports dork, really. That's my escape. Like, you know what? I love reading. I read to be mm-hmm. me, but I also I'm reading to become a better writer. Like if I want to shut my brain off, I watch sports. You know, that's just how I like, you know, that's my comfort. I consume way too much local Boston sports radio, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need to be able to yell at the TV.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right. What else? I think that was most of it. So I'm going to give you the wrap-up question. I ask this of everybody. Shout out to a brick-and-mortar bookstore of your choice.
Oh, always love to give a shout-out. Well, I mean, can I give a couple? Yeah. So one is the Brookline Booksmith, which is in Boston, or Brookline. Brookline's like a part of Boston. It's kind of confusing. That was the bookstore I went to my first ever author reading, like way back in the early 2000s. So that place has always seemed like magic to me. So I pretty much always make sure that when I have a book coming out, I do my first event there, just almost as like a fun tradition. But I would also like to shout out Copper Dog Books in Beverly, Massachusetts. That's a town I grew up in. It's a relatively new store, but they're, you know, they're killing it up there. And, you know, to maybe bookend it a little bit when we talked about the pandemic with another, they had opened probably only like a few months, maybe even less than a year before 2020 happened. And my mom, who lives in the same town, you know, she has COPD and, you know, she couldn't be risking anything, especially at the start. But, you know, the owner of the store, Meg, was just so kind. Like, my ordered a bunch of books because my mom was going to be sort of by herself in her apartment. You know, Meg delivered them to her apartment and offered to get her groceries and stuff, which, you know, she didn't need. But, you know, it's just, that's so many of these, you know, local, you know, bookstores, that's what they're part of the community, and they act like they're part of the community. And that's definitely the case in both Copper Dogs and Brookline Booksmith's cases.
Yeah. Now, I get that. I was actually, at the time, I was still working at the Bookworm here in Omaha when the COVID hit. And so we started, you know, things we would have never thought of, you know, curbside pickup, some right. of our elderly customers, we'd actually drive it to their house and stuff. So,
yeah,
it was,
thank you for doing that.
It was a weird time. It was
definitely
a weird time. All right. So I can't think of anything else off the top of my head. Anything that you'd want to talk about other than what we already talked about?
Can I swear?
Yeah.
Fuck AI. Like, I hope everybody who's listening is not using ChatGPT or, you know, or any sort of like Midjourney or that stuff, because it's bad. It's all bad. There's no good. Fight it for as long as you can. There's no ethical way to use it currently, as it's all built off of stolen books, stolen art. And it's just a ruinous for the environment. So sorry.
Yeah. No. My thing is, it doesn't work, because a lot of times, no, if you try to do a Google search, even, it'll give you that AI answer first.
Yeah, you can. For anyone out there, if you don't want that to pop up, type in your normal Google search and write -AI, and it'll exclude the AI. Yeah,
I just noticed I was looking up a local author, Tosca Lee, had a new book coming out next year, and so I tried looking up what it was, and the AI told me all about this book, but it's by someone else.
Yeah.
It's like, because it was like book three in a series. And I'm like, you know, I haven't read everything Tosca has written, but I think I remember that.
Right. Yeah.
AI is not, we need, if they're going to do AI, it needs to like clean my house for me, not write a book for me.
Exactly.
I need Rosie the robot from the Jetsons. That's what I need.
That's in my novel, Dead But Dreaming of Electric Sheep. There is definitely a Rosie the robot reference.
Perfect. Well, I will get that if nobody else does. Yeah. All right. So, Paul, I just want to thank you for your time. Again, anybody who's watching this, if you've got young kids or if you just want to read it yourself, this book was very, very good. I just finished it today. I will get a review out for it. Also, if you're watching this, there will be links down in the description, not only to any book that was mentioned, but also to all of the bookstores that were mentioned as well. So, Paul, thank you for your time. Appreciate
you. Thank you, Edward. Thank you for saying, for reading and enjoying the book. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right.